What game is this?
No game. Kill me. Or take me in.
The Synth Radio Podcast.
Hi, I'm Chad L. Coleman, Tyrese from The Walking Dead, and Cuddy from The Wire, and you are listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast. Here, your host, Cynic.
Hey, the facts are Spider-Man belongs in the MCU. Sony was delusional thinking they didn't need Marvel, and now he's back. And we, the fans, are 100% proudly responsible for that.
Igri?
As long as DC wants to make dark and gritty movies, they're going to lag behind Marvel in every category.
And Ryan?
Batman vs. Superman is objectively better than Infinity War.
This is the greatest show of all time.
Everybody, and happy holidays. And this is episode 161 of the Cynic Radio Podcast. And I'm your devil egg eating host, Cynic. Try saying that three times fast. And joining me, as always, a couple of rebels, my co-hosts, Igri and Ryan. And on this week's show, 12 episodes up and 12 episodes down of Star Wars' latest offering, Andor. Disney Plus took us back to a time and introduced us to a bunch of people that were rebelling before it was cool. So, guys, I mean, the holidays are upon us. IG, did you have a decent Thanksgiving?
Yeah, like I still have probably half of the food I made left in the house. So I'm going to be eating like every variation of turkey and ham that you could think of for the next probably 2 weeks. But it was a nice visit. And of course, I had to go out and do some Black Friday deals and everything, although it wasn't really the same as other years. But that's OK, because that meant the stores were less busy. And so I didn't get trampled by anybody. And I was, of course, nowhere near when they were opening. So maybe they all wore themselves out before I got there around noon.
It'd be interesting to look at that and find out whether stores are actually busy like they used to be, like wall to wall people or people trying to kick the door to get in because the whole shop online thing has gotten so big. I had a quiet at home dinner with the wife and we watched a little football, cooked some turkey, and I did a little online shopping. I didn't really risk the crowds because being in the New York and New Jersey area, they can be pretty fierce. You know, these are some of my favorite podcasts, IG, because whenever we get some Star Wars content, I just love jumping into it. That's our bread and butter. That's how we became friends. And that's kind of spurred on the show is talking about and obsessing over Star Wars.
Star Wars has been a lifelong thing for me, right? You know, I mean, it started, you know, way back in 1977 because I'm an old man. You know, is seeing Star Wars a number of times in that original summer when it came out and like having all the toys and lightsabers and everything else and always wanting to be Han Solo or Luke Skywalker. And then later in life now wanting to be Darth Vader or Kylo Ren. And it's really one of my biggest passions. I mean, even if you look up here, you can see my Mythosaur skull right up there. And Star Wars is my bread and butter, and it, like, even as bad as some of it gets sometimes, I still love watching it. And you know, even as much as I wish they would have done different things with the sequels, they're still Star Wars and they still feel Star Warsy to me. So I'm perfectly fine, like, anytime something comes out, if we're going to spend time here on the Cynic Radio Podcast reviewing it all, I'm in for it. I'm there. I love it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it takes me back to my childhood, but I've also enjoyed it as an adult. Now, they've seemed to go the route of they're choosing TV over movies after the last three. Do you agree with that, or would you like to see them return back to the box office?
Oh, I definitely want to see them come back to the box office. There's too much stuff out there that they can do, too many opportunities that, like, we can tell stories about. There's areas that they haven't covered there. I mean, and they've shown that they can cover some things that aren't necessarily just the Skywalker saga, that they can go into and still keep it interesting. And they really proved that here. I mean, it was proven pretty much with The Mandalorian because The Mandalorian was so good. But, you know, what, I mean, there are obviously other Jedi or people that were trained like Jedi or Force sensitive people running around, right? Because Ahsoka lived, right? She showed up in Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian. So other people are around. Like, why can't we find out what happened to some of those? And they don't even have to be named characters that we saw in other places in the original Skywalker saga. They can make up new characters, and they could do like all the clone troopers, like we saw one hanging out on one of the planets in Book of Boba Fett, just hanging out there, kind of like helping an old trooper out, trying to collect change in his helmet. There's got to be more than just that one. They made millions of clones. There's all kinds of stuff they could do. I'd love to see some movie about some things going on. And I mean, they announced some that I think have gone on the back burner, like Rogue Squadron was announced, and then they haven't done anything with it.
Yeah, there was a lot of movie projects announced that I don't know if they're going to see the light of day. But I remember before Disney Plus, there was a lot of ideas for TV shows that we heard bandied about and that never actually happened either. I'm happy with the TV shows because it's like weekly content and it gives me time to think about it. And I'm really wore out with the whole Netflix, hey, let's release it all at once, because I'm done. I'm a junkie. I'm done with it within a weekend. And then I got to watch it two or three more times to remember it. And it's not like I'm not going to do it, but I like looking forward to a Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday when things are released. I kind of miss the week to week wait on things. I remember the first time that I went through Breaking Bad, and I think I got into it around the maybe second or third season, waiting for that every week for that last season, for that, you know, the last set of shows was just excruciating. The same with The Sopranos. It's like, who's going to live? Who's going to die? You know, where are they going to go with it? So I like the week to week release. I don't know if I want movies or TV alone. I would like both. I'd like the big popcorn blockbusters, but at the same time, I'd like the week to week smaller stories about, you know, this vast galaxy that everybody's inhabited. One thing I was thinking about, though, as you were talking, IG, was it kind of cracks me up that Lucas was firm on it was Yoda, Luke, and Obi-Wan, and that was it. And as we need for content, now we just keep finding more and more Jedi that are alive as we go further down the rabbit hole. So maybe the Empire didn't do as good of a job as they thought they did wiping out the Jedi.
Hey, you know, I mean, anytime you get a big global or international or super galactic power that thinks that they're doing literally everything and making it all work, you know, there's always going to be things that slip through the cracks, and it's fine. You know, and you were, and one of the things you were talking about is the week to week thing. You know, the thing I love about that is, you know, I remember watching a lot of the things as they were coming out, and it's like you get to do the speculation. What's going to happen next week? And that's like the water cooler talk. You know, you sit down with your friends and you're like, well, this happened and this was cool and this was cool. Where do you think it's going to go? And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're dead wrong. Like my big one was everybody was like, where did Rey come from? Right. And I was sure even all the way up until they basically like went the other way in The Rise of Skywalker. I'm like, that's Kenobi's kid. Like I was 100%. That's Kenobi's kid. Like everybody else was coming up with all kinds of other crazy ideas and or another like Anakin virgin birth thing or something. I'm like, that's Kenobi's kid. Like there's a perfect way to tie it together. I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't. But Palpatine's kid is fine, too.
Well, Ryan, that leads me to my first question. Does knowing the destination ruin the journey for you? I mean, we obviously knew how Cassian's story ended. Did it affect the way you watched the show?
No, generally not. I think in any situation we get so much in the age of like IPs and everything being, you know, beaten to death and us getting prequels and prequels of prequels. It can take away from the story. So a lot, it all really just depends on what the story is you're trying to tell. So obviously, I think the story that they're trying to tell is clearly something we haven't gotten in Star Wars, and we're getting kind of the planting the seeds of the rebellion. And I think that makes it really interesting, because just as Rogue One was a great movie that was a prequel to Star Wars, I mean, this is, you know, a prequel to that, and it gives us things that we didn't have and we didn't know, and fills in and colors in things in a way that really does make it interesting.
Yeah, I guess I can agree with you there. I mean, IG, during the whole Marvel Netflix sagas, they complained a lot about episode count. I mean, it was, some of them had to be 12 or 13 episodes or it was nothing. Do you think that this could have been covered in slightly less episodes?
I think it could have been probably covered in 4 episodes if they wanted to. But I really kind of like the choice of not squeezing in so much in every episode and really fleshing out the characters and the stories, right? So stretching this out into 12 episodes meant we got to live in it, right? We got to feel it. We got to like get an idea of how everything is going to work and why people get so against the Empire, like why it makes you feel that way, because it wasn't just a, like, look, they're doing bad things. No, we're going to see exactly how bad and how traumatizing it is to people. And we're going to understand it because they're going to give us the time to actually soak it in versus we're going to speed through this. And because we know where we're going, let's just get there.
The Empire likes to bill itself, Ryan, as a more prosperous, safer, and secure galaxy under them, right? But do you think the indigenous people of the mining planet of Kanari would agree?
Absolutely not. And I think that's kind of how any fascist colonialist state tries to build themselves, right? Like, so they have to try to sell themselves, obviously. And I think, but in allowing for safety, you have to play by their rules. And if you don't, then it will be death and destruction while they steal your resources. So, yeah, I mean, of course, I think most people would disagree. And clearly the people of Kanari disagree. And so would many, many indigenous populations.
IG, how I was kidnapped by your mother, Cassian's mother slash abductor, Marva, saves Cassa from the mining disaster in Kanari. Well, also in the process, kind of kidnaps him and leaving his sister Carrie to die. If you were Cassa, would that be your opening salvo in every argument? Say she wanted you to do your chores or finish your homework. Would you be like, oh yeah, remember that time you left my sister to die on that planet and kidnapped me?
And remember that one time when you promised that these things were going to happen? It might be, but you know, I think that the way I see it and the amount of love that it appears that Cassian has for Marva, I think that she treated him very well. She cared for him very much and made sure that he was happy, healthy, and doing well, all the while basically sowing seeds of rebellion wherever she went, right? Like, really just like kind of doing two things, but like the top priority, I think, just based on how much he cares for her, was that she took care of him. And so it really turns into a hard thing because he might understand, especially at a young age, seeing like, you know, some of his friends get killed right in front of him there, he might understand what kind of danger he was in and that she got him out of it. So it would be a good opening salvo for any child that has a parent that had to make a tough decision. But I think he's smarter than that. And it's credit to the show.
Us kids just love rubbing our parents' mistakes in their faces, don't we? Ever since Kevin Smith introduced the idea of outside contractors working in the second Death Star when it was destroyed in the first Clerks movie, it made me wonder, Ryan, about the sheer manpower it would take to rule a galaxy. And during Andor, we got kind of a deep dive into that idea as they introduced us to the first ever private security firm that was in charge of Ferrix. Now, despite Ciro Khan's and his soldiers' best efforts to stop Andor and Lutheran, do you think they were kind of woefully overmatched by the two seasoned fighters? And do you think that escape alone should have built a little more trust between the two of them?
To answer the second question first, I'd say no. I don't think that should have built any trust with them, because I think they both are untrustworthy people. That's how they got where they got. And so, I think that's something that has to be earned on both ends. So I could see where they both wouldn't trust each other and are equally using each other as tools to whatever, you know, their own end is. I also do think that, you know, when you have this situation where, yeah, they're contracting it out to these, you know, outside companies who are trying to manage, you know, no different from I think what we do get sometimes in the States. And they did seem woefully undermatched. Maybe it's that they don't see action all that much. Although you would think that based on where they, you know, it starts off in a brothel and you know, you'd think in a seedy area, you'd think they would get some action and some training, but they clearly didn't. And we're woefully overmatched by, you know, at the end of the day, like you have Luthen, who we don't know much of his background, but let's give him benefit of the doubt that he is somebody who's, you know, extremely savvy and tough. But then you have Cassian, who, I guess we get it. We get some, again, same thing. We don't get a lot with him, but they've never worked together. So to watch them kind of destroy, you know, a group is impressive on their end, but also maybe these guys should be better trained. And maybe that's why the Empire decided, you know what, we had to take the reins here. You guys are not doing the job.
IG, let's talk your MVP for the show. For me, the run of the series would have been Stellan Skarsgård as Lutheran. His acting was superb. He was just walking that fine line between the rebellion and the Empire, while just slightly stoking the embers. He played a great spy character, and I think he stole just about every scene that he was in. Who was your MVP?
You know, I would have probably been right there with you with Stellan right up until the very end. But that last scene with Marva. Basically, I think they actually, there was some news story I saw recently that, like, apparently they needed to go back to their Star Wars thing where they don't swear a whole lot. And apparently originally it was fuck the Empire, and it turned to like fight the Empire. So I think that is as little of a role as she played, knowing the role that kind of put all this together as far as who Cassian became has to do with Marva. And then that last little hologram during her funeral, that was really just an amazing and moving moment in the show. So I guess because, you know, we got to have a little variety here. We can't all pick the same person. I think I'm going to go with Marva.
I want to go with somebody else for some variety, but it has to be Skellen Skarsgård. I mean, this is really an ensemble, not something that you really considered prior to, but if you look at all of the performances just down the line, I think pound for pound, I'd give it for Forest Whitaker, who in the couple scenes he was in just knocked it out the park. But I've got to say the MVP is Skellen Skarsgård. He just, like you said, I mean, I think he played that role of just like even just that speech alone that he had was incredible. And his just kind of when he did have to fake it, it really played so well, because he clearly is somebody who's good at what he does, but is idealistic in his own way and believe and has his way of going about things, which not everybody's going to agree with, but he's committed. And yeah, I think he's got to be the MVP.
I mean, we've all saw the movies, watched the shows, read the books, read the comics, played the video games, IG and I, knowing what we know about the mistrust in the Sith Order and then the upper levels of the Empire leadership. And now we see the conflict and backbiting in the ISB. IG, is there any way the Empire could have not failed?
Well, not in the way that they organize themselves, right? Because they're too busy patting themselves on the back and rewarding people for stepping on someone else to get to the top. It is really just a very difficult position to be in, because you can't just show up to work, especially like in the ISB, you can't show up to work, do a good job, turn in your reports and go home and expect to get promoted. You almost have to make somebody else look bad to make yourself look good, which is not a good way to promote everybody really wanting to do it as a team. You have people that are going to look for ways to make somebody else fail while you succeed. And that's just, it's going to fail, and it's going to fail spectacularly eventually, because too many things are going to slip through the ground. Leia said it best, right? The tighter you close your fist, the more systems will slip through your fingers. That's exactly what happens. And they show it happening right here from the beginning, because you could see the Empire showed up in force and they closed up tight and they got overrun really hard right there in the finale. So you can't do things that way and hope to be successful, because you can be successful for a little while. It's like an example that I had with most of my bosses and stuff. Like I've had discussions with them, and like, there are two types of leaders and both are effective, right? You have the supportive leader that trusts his team and lets them make decisions and empowers them. And then you have the one that rules by fear, right? A lot of military leaders love to rule by fear and scare you and yell at you and do everything else. They're both effective for a while, but the one that's effective long-term is the one that's supportive and wants to help people up. And the Empire, and especially the ISB, is not supportive. They're there to rule with an iron fist.
Luthen's reason for recruiting Andor wasn't just because he had a knack for obtaining stolen Imperial components, but he needed them for a much bigger mission. Ryan, the heist on Aldani, in my opinion, at least, was worth the almost 3-episode buildup we had. But was it kind of surprising that the crew was able to pull it off, seeing the large amount of distress they kind of had for each other and the almost insurmountable obstacles they had to overcome to get that done?
It was great to make that a 3-episode arc. And I think a lot of the show was about kind of these, having these mini movies, because the kind of tone and setting changed, you know, significantly throughout the show, from the first 3 episodes to the second 3 episodes to the next 3. So I think it was it was kind of a little bit of yada yada yadaing to get things done. And I get that you kind of had to show both his competency, as well as their kind of distrust for him, and then building up these characters and their relationships with each other and their own distrust. And I think it worked really well as far as like the character building was concerned. It was exciting throughout. And even, you know, the build to the lights was really cool, and how they made it work and everything, yeah, everything about it was really good. Logistically maybe didn't quite work. And considering the insurmountable odds, the fact that you can bring somebody on at the last minute and they, you know, function great as part of the team. Okay. And at the end of the day, like, they needed him. So it's like, what would have happened if he was not there? That part's pretty shocking that they were ready to go through with that plan, really against insurmountable odds and needing the guy that just happened to fall into their lap. That was a little weird.
A large amount of the distrust for Clem, or as we know him, the smuggler formerly known as Andor, was driven by Arvel Skeen. Now, IG, he called Cassian out repeatedly, went through his bags, but once the heist was over, he admitted, "Hey, I have no brother. And oh, by the way, let's steal the money we just stole." Have you ever been in a situation where somebody constantly accused you of something only to find out that they were hiding dirty all along?
Well, I think, you know, having lived life, you always find somebody that runs that way, that, you know, pretends to be one way, but you find out later they're completely a different way. And I mean, there have been a few friends that I've had that have done that. Like, you know, like, you spend a couple of years and all of a sudden, you know, something happens and it's like they show their true colors. You know, it's like, I've had some where, like, every time that something happened and they needed some help, like, some, I've had some that have moved 3 or 4 times in like a short amount of time, and I show up and help them pack their stuff up and put it in trucks and move it around. And then the one time you're like, "Hey, you know, I need something." They're like, "Man, I can't do that right now." And like, almost get indignant about it, you know. And then jobs where, like, I've had, not so much in my later years, but in my earlier years when I was younger, you know, I had jobs where I have bosses that are like super nice and super like, "Yeah, everything's fine and you're doing a good job," until like I want something. And then all of a sudden, maybe I'm not as good or as valuable of an employee as they said I was. I mean, I worked in software for many years making video games, and my boss there, who was making a lot of money and basically showed up maybe 3 days a week for a couple hours at a time because I was making everything work. I was basically just going around the office making sure everything was getting done, because he's like, "I need you to do this and I need you to do that." And I wasn't making a lot of money for the amount of money that the company was bringing in. It was decent, but it wasn't great. Well, I was like, "Hey," like, I kind of did some research, and because the internet was new and things were starting to get out there, I'm like, "This is how much normally people make doing what I'm doing. Just my basic job title, not even counting all the other stuff I do here." And I'm like, "I know that's a big jump from the money I'm at right now, but can we move up a ways?" And he's like, "Well, how much is a ways?" And I gave him a number, and he's like, "That's way too much. You don't deserve that much money." And I was like, "Oh, really?" So yeah, you find some people that, like, you know, they treat you a certain way for a while, and then all of a sudden it just, they show their true colors. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but that thing happened. I mean, they showed it in Star Wars here brilliantly. And I love that, you know, you can draw so many things to real life. And that's one of the things they did with Andor, is they made it very relatable. They made it so that you can feel that, like, people are really mostly out for their own. And those that aren't are the people that you should hold closer to you. So I liked that turn. And I liked that Andor was like, "Well, then I'll take care of this right now, buddy."
Yeah, there was really no thought involved about just taking him out, which I kind of loved. And it showed a little bit of loyalty to everybody he did the heist with, even though they questioned him. The gaslighting was definitely strong with that character. And almost like, "I know what I'm doing," Ryan, the return of Forrest Whitaker's character, Saul Guerrera. I mean, if there is one character that deserves a Rage Against the Machine walkout song as he goes in the battle, it's Saul. Although he had minimal impact on this particular series, do you think this is a character that we should see get a more in-depth look at?
No, I think he's perfect in the role that he's been in so far. I think Forrest Whitaker is one of the great actors of our time, and is like just an acting heavyweight. But I don't think we need a Saw Gerrera series. I think he's perfect as like the special attraction and the guy that you get for a couple episodes who can knock it out the park, or the guy that you get for a movie who's in there for a couple scenes and knocks it out the park. So I loved his scene. I love that scene with him in Skellen Skarsgård. You know, I talked to you guys before about that. I thought it was, you have these two acting heavyweights going toe to toe, and they were really going at each other. You know, it's one of those things where I think they were both, you know, without kind of hamming it up, they were both going at each other, and it was just a phenomenal scene. And it's amazing. You know, at the end of the day, we all love Star Wars, but it's for kids. And so to watch something like this, just you know, I'll put that up there with anything as far as the, you know, performances go, and even, you know, dialogue and everything. And I think that was just phenomenal. So yeah, I don't think we need a series, but for him to be like a featured player to come in, you know, hit it out the park a couple times, you know, a series, that'd be perfect. And I think that's the role. And I'd love, you know, I'd love to see a little bit more of him next season. But I definitely don't think we need a series for Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, I'm with Ryan. I don't want a series. But what I do want is I want to, like, he's got this reputation. I want to see that reputation put into effect. I want to see, like, the planning and him actually out there making stuff happen. That's what I want to see. Like, you know, we've gotten all that, because we didn't get him in Rogue One doing anything, really. We didn't get him, you know, except for, you know, sacrificing the pilot to the Borg gullet, And he just talked a big game here and said, yeah, we're ready to go. And it's like, you're going to sacrifice him? I mean, it was an amazing job acting. It was great speeches. But what I want to see is, I want to see why Saw Gerrera is somebody that's looked at the way he is. And so I know they've done some things in, like, the Clone Wars and Rebels and things like that, but I want to see it with Forrest Whitaker and see it happen that way. Not his own series, but he needs to have a more central part in the next season.
What about Disney Plus taking one of their feature premieres, like a 45-minute small movie about him? You know, maybe just telling his backstory and showing why he's someone that, you know, helped start the rebellion. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. And by the way, Forrest Whitaker was the bomb in The Shield. Trust no one, including your spouse, IG. If Luthen is the father of the rebellion, then Mon Mothra is the mother. And she's played amazingly by Genevieve O'Reilly. In spite of her political maneuverings with the Senate and dodging the Empire's look into her finances, do you think her biggest challenge was at home?
It very well could be at home. Her husband seems like he's a very self-interested snob, right? And as long as he gets to do and party and have the things he wants to have, everything's good for him. But, like, Mon Mothma has plans to save the galaxy. She understands the oppression from the Empire and wants to do better. And she's tried to do it politically, and that isn't working. So she's financially trying to support the rebellion. And I think they had to spend a lot of time this season setting things up, right? So we didn't get to see Mon Mothma, the rebel leader. We got to see Mon Mothma, the politician, starting to convert. And so I think some people may have been disappointed in, like, she didn't really do much except basically talk to Luthen a few times and possibly provide some financing. But the fact that she was able to do that and very quietly but very directly, like, remove anything about where the money came from in a simple car ride, knowing that her chauffeur is basically a spy. She's smarter than everyone else in the room, but she doesn't let everyone know that. And I think it was really well portrayed. I think she did a really good job. And I'm just hoping that, like the same with Saw Gerrera, I want to see some of the things about why Mon Mothma becomes so respected in the rebellion. There's got to be some things that happen. I want to see that in season two.
Well, I think we're definitely headed that direction. And I do hope we see more of Saw and more of Mon as we go forward, because I really do believe that we're going to see a season two of this show. But Ryan, we got to file this one under unchecked authority. Andor post heist is on vacation and laying low, simply going to the store with zero proof, is detained and given a 6-year sentence with some irony by a droid that is similar to his K2SO droid in Rogue One. I mean, we've spoke about this before. Isn't this kind of our fear that we're in reality, this is where we're headed, that you can be swooped up, charged, thrown in some work colony and there isn't much to be said about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I wonder how much of this show was intentionally like, we're going to talk about policing as we got in the first couple episodes and the prison industrial complex, and, you know, it's really weird, like how you got a lot of that. And I think it, you know, glosses to an extent, it glosses over it, doesn't spend a lot of time on it. So I don't know if it was an intentional, these are themes we want to address and talk about, or if it was just like, this is how to get from point A to point B. But it was really interesting that it incorporated that. And then again, it just makes the empire seem more evil. It's like this just dead, you know, life, soulless bureaucracy where these kinds of things can happen. And maybe just, you know, but then, you know, you can look at it a few different ways, and maybe it shows, you know, you can get too big, and that, you know, this is then what happens. And then things are just ripe for breaking down. But it was really interesting, you know, how it was, you know, discussing, like I said, policing and, you know, and prison and you know, the ethics around a lot of that.
Yeah, it was kind of terrifying. And just where he was sent, I mean, 6 years being a cog in the imperial military complex on an assembly line job that you're never going to get out of is similar, not all the way, but is similar to the worst job I ever had. I won't mention them, but there's a copier company that had a toner factory around me, and I got sent there as a temp. And there was no wasted movement on that line. They had a supervisor for every line. And if you did anything that was considered wasting time, you got pulled to the side and taken care. The guy would stand over your lunch table as you ate lunch and made sure that at 30 minutes, you were back out on the floor and ready to work. So your lunch was actually about 28, 29 minutes, because at 30 minutes, you got to be back to work. And then the guy looked at me on the second day and he's like, you know, you're really lucky to be here. They're paying $12 plus benefits. I was like, oof, I've got to get out of here. I went back to the temporary office and asked for another assignment. IG, what was your worst job ever?
Ooh, worst job. You know, there've been a few. I've been a dishwasher. That was pretty bad, although it was at a pretty swanky restaurant, so the chefs would always cook me up something good to eat. So there was a bonus, but I mean, it was like $4.25 an hour. But, you know, I'm old, so that's what it is. It'd have to be a tie. Like, I worked at Target, was my first job in high school, as a cart pusher. Back when you actually had people that pushed the carts in, they didn't have the motorized buggy that pushed them in with a remote control. They had guys that would go out and do that, and like, I started there like in November. So I was working there through the winter and everything. And that was terrible, like out pushing that in Minnesota snows and everything else like that. And I guess the other one would be Blockbuster. That was a pretty terrible job because they make all kinds of promises and everything else. But it's like, you know, always just like, oh, well, you're standing here. Why don't you go clean some shelves? Why don't you go do this? Why don't you go do that? That and the clientele we had some clientele that was like crazy, crazy bad. And we had one guy that came in three times a week religiously, every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday around 1 o'clock. And that guy had the worst body odor. You could smell him from across the store.
And that's how we met.
But yeah, I guess, you know, between those two jobs, bought a tie, you know, one was just sucked. I mean, on Christmas Eve, the Target store closed at 6 o'clock, and they're like, yeah, just bring in the carts and then you can go home. I brought in all the carts, and then they're like, okay, go mop the floors. And I went and mopped the floors. They're like, okay, go clean the bathrooms. So I went and cleaned them, and they just kept finding things to do. I didn't get out of there till 10:30 at night. I was one of the last people out of the store because they kept making me go do things for $3.85 an hour. So, you know, you young people out there begging for $15 an hour, I think you deserve it. Don't get me wrong, but I worked for some really poor jobs for a lot less money.
Ryan, let's talk Luthen's daring escape in his ship while caught in the middle of a tractor beam. Was that not one of the coolest, most badass Star Wars moments ever?
Yeah, no, that was. I, you know, don't know how much I can add to it, except like I love the way the scene was built up. It was tense. I had no idea that was going to be his approach. You know, just it was, you know, there was nothing told me like, oh my God, this ship is really badass. And yeah, that was great. Like again, not sure I can add much to it, but yeah, that was a badass scene and loved how he was able to get out of that.
He does have the best ship's computer that we've seen anywhere so far, right? I mean, I know that we found out in the Solo story that Lola, Calrissian's droid, got basically built into the Falcon. So like the Falcon having like some kind of attitude and everything is actually a canon thing, but that this droid and the amount of things that it's able to process and get it like clearance codes and everything else that it does. It is the coolest ship's computer or ship's droid that we've seen so far.
But we've been told from day one, right? The first Star Wars movie, you get caught in a tractor beam, it's game, set, match. You're not getting out of that shit. Prepare to be boarded. So it was just awesome for once to see somebody like kind of get away. And, you know, the way he did it was my respect for that character. It flew out the window. It was just, it went to epic proportions when he pulled that off. But that's what we expect from a spy or a smuggler type in the Star Wars universe, is just unexpected badass moments. And we finally got one in the series. Our old friend Andy Serkis, IG, shows up playing a prisoner, the first shift line supervisor, going back to the assembly line. He does a great job of being a company man until he finds out that nobody's getting released. Could you see and feel his struggle in his acting as he went from denial, regret, accepting, and then open rebellion?
You know, Andy Serkis, basically in everything he's shown up in, has somehow found a way to just kick it up even another notch every time he shows up. And I don't know how he hasn't been given more accolades or awards or anything yet, but they're going to be coming. He's an amazing actor. And he goes from, yeah, we're going to get, like, you know, some flavor in our food today, to let's blow this motherfucker up in a very short amount of time when he realizes what's going on. And the struggle to get there, like, you know, in real time, watching as they just watch one of their friends die and they're standing there on program talking about what needs to happen and when it needs to happen. Like, it needs to happen now. We can't wait anymore. He got there very quickly, but you could see that the pain and the anguish and the struggle, because he'd believed that they were just going to do their job, get their food, and get out of there when they were supposed to get out of there. It was really well acted, and it, because it was so subtle, it wasn't just like thrown out in your face, like you had to say everything. You could just see the struggle in his face. Andy Serkis, like, has earned the right to kind of show up in anything he wants, and plus he could be any actor because I'll just mocap him. He's good that way too.
Yeah, that was some fantastic acting, and it almost makes me wonder. I loved him as Claw in the first Black Panther movie, but it almost makes me feel like maybe the Marvel miscast him or misused him, because he needed a much bigger arc than a one-off. Like, that's the one disappointing part about it, is like, all right, now he's dead and we'll never see him again. The same with Scarsdale. I mean, I feel like Marvel really could have done more with him than just making like a third character in a Thor movie and having him pop back up to give advice and help. But I really enjoyed his acting and his role in this. And my heart broke for him as he's standing on top of that platform and he says, I can't swim. It's like, oh, there's only one way out. A doggy paddle, my friend.
Well, it's like Andy Serkis has played two roles in Star Wars where he's basically been killed off prematurely. So it's like he's got no luck in this universe. So yeah, he's a phenomenal actor. I loved him as Snoke. And like, I completely understood the reason for getting rid of him, you know, not to rehash those arguments, but I would have loved to have seen him as Snoke, because I thought he was great even in that role. So it's kind of funny that, yeah, he's a guy who's like, he's put on two awesome performances in the same series and has been killed off early twice.
You know, it's funny you say that, because his Snoke stuff, the mocap, I finally saw a little bit of it. And while he's on the throne kind of taunting Rey, I mean, his acting is really fucking good. You know, just he leans to the side, and it made me respect Snoke in a whole different way. Ryan, episode 10, Only One Way Out, is a masterpiece, in my opinion. I was on the edge of my seat, and I was loudly rooting for Cassian and Kido and the rest of the group to get out. But did you feel that it was going to work, or something was terribly going to go wrong?
I think both, and that kind of is what happened. You know, I think it does play on that kind of that prison break kind of genre, and it does a great job of, like, you know, they're able to make their way out, and it's chaos, and there's triumph, and then they reach that wall, right? There's a giant body of water, and you realize, okay, well, you know, a lot of them are going to die. Maybe most of them are going to die, but the few that escape hopefully spread the word. And that's kind of just part of the seeds being planted of the rebellion. But yeah, I thought it was a fantastic episode, and it was fitting that it wasn't like, oh, you know, they all just run off and escape and get out. Like, and even with Andy Serkis, like with his character, that as much as I'd love to see him again, it's like, I hope that was it for him, because look, he can't swim. So, you know, that's probably going to be the end of it, especially with that size of body of water. It's not like there was like a beach, you know, a couple of kilometers away and somebody can help drag him over. So, you know, that's it. But I think it was a really well done episode, and it had that right mix of triumph and tragedy built into it. So it worked really well.
And once again, like you brought up before, it was a complete tonal shift from the rest of the series, right? The buildup to the heist was one thing. The prison and the prison break was another. Like, they were almost like completely different shows, but they worked together so well. IG Mon Mothma covers the suspicions about the missing money by blaming her husband's gambling. Like, that's never happened to any of us before. But then quickly agrees to set up her daughter with a meeting with less than reputable guy's son. Do you think her decision was purely self-preservation, or do you think it was for the rebellion?
I think at this point, like, all the decisions are to make sure that the rebellion can carry on. I think that given her power, given her placement in the Galactic Senate, knowing exactly how things are going and seeing how things are affecting the rest of the galaxy, I think that she will do whatever it takes, up to and including marrying off her daughter to a mobster's son, to make sure that this continues. So it's a really subtle point, and people could take it any way they want it. But I really do think that it's showing the sacrifice that Mon's really, really willing to take to make sure that this takes off. I mean, the blaming her husband thing, that was just a simple way to kind of excuse it. But she could have just let things keep going that way, and it'd be really easy to set up. But she's willing to go that next step in setting up other financing to make this stuff work. And that's the interesting part. Like, she really wants to get this rebellion going because she knows the Empire is bad. And it's really well done.
One of the small issues I had in the show, Ryan, was, did the plot to kill Andor by sending, Clinton Vell, and having them stationed on Ferrix waiting for Cassian to show up to kill, did it feel like a little out of place and possibly forced? Like, it's one thing if they said, if he gave him the directive, okay, if he comes back and gets captured, make sure he doesn't, you know, make sure he doesn't make it out of here alive. But to just simply, yeah, he is basically the reason why this heist worked. He's basically the reason why everybody's still alive. But if he shows up here, kill him. I don't know. I had a problem with that. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, you consider, okay, the heist on Aldani, we would like to think it was done by, like, their A-team, right? Like, these are, you know, if you're going to pull that off, you need your best people. And so we're assuming those are a couple of his best people. So to then send them on this mission that could last who knows how long, could be months, it could be a year, seemed weird. Like, I understand needing to off Andor, especially Cassian, especially if, like, he's not going to be part of this, right? But it doesn't make sense that they would send them there and that plot. So I would agree. That was one of the few areas, like, most of the writing on the show has been great. That was one of the few areas of, like, okay, that didn't really make sense. Like, they would send somebody else to do it or come up with something else. Like, that, there's got to be a better way to kind of catch him and kill him than sending people there just on the hopes that maybe he'll happen to possibly show up.
IG, the Township Rebellion, the morning turns to anger, and the people of Ferrix mount the first shots of the rebellion at the behest of Maeva Andor. I mean, she gave a great speech. It was very moving, and the people rebelled. There was a bomb thrown. Do you feel people in general, not just fictional or non-fictional character, do you think people in general are a little too go along to get along until it's too late?
Absolutely. I mean, that's some of the stuff that we've seen. And, like, and then we've seen the too late come around too, right? I mean, there's a lot of people out there that, like, when the riots happened a couple of summers ago after the police killed somebody here in Minneapolis, like, they're like, well, they want to blame the riots and not the action that caused the riots. And because we'd all just allowed the police to do what they want freely for so long, and every time a cop got charged with something, they got off. You know, like, it's like we just all kind of just sat on our hands and said, well, this is the way life is. And then when it finally hit that tipping point, that boiling over point, and things changed, like, it just shows, like, you can only push people's buttons for so long. And you could tell that the people here have been feeling oppressed by the Empire's taking over of their hotel and their constant patrols through town and telling them when they can have their funeral and how many people are allowed to show up and everything else. Like, that's the tipping point. Like you like, this is just, we're asking just for telling you that we're going to do this. And now you're telling us we can only have 40 people and it has to be at 3, and come on, like you're pushing too many things. And you're right. Most of the time, if you don't overly oppress people, like you can oppress them and you can get them to sit down and not do anything for a while, because most people don't want the fight. It's not worth the fight to go through all that. But that's only going to last for so long. And if you keep pushing and you keep pushing, you keep something under pressure for too long, it's going to explode. And we've seen it in the real world, and they showed it here in Andor, and it was really beautifully done. They might have just had to deal with the one kid with the bomb because they killed his friend, but that wouldn't have been the whole town, like, basically taking over everybody. So it's a really well done, and I think that the allegories to the real world don't fall short of me. I hope they're not falling short of plenty of other people too, because I do like it because it just, again, it makes me feel like I'm engaged and I'm recognized when the things match to how I feel in the world. So it's an interesting way to tell a story.
Well, and it for me, it changed. I used to tease my wife that when I die, I wanted her to just throw me in the garbage. But now my instructions for death have completely done a 180. When I die, I want you guys to promise me, please, please, to make me into a blunt instrument that I can be used now to smite my enemies. Making me into a brick to just throw at people would be the perfect ending for this journey on this earth. I need this. I'm asking you. I'm asking anybody that may or may not listen to this. Please make me into a brick. Ryan, do you feel like we've left enough loose ends in the story that a second season is warranted?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, first, what happened to his sister? Like that was a storyline that we've got no resolution to. So I'd like to know that. I would like to see more of Mon Mothma. I think early on, we're seeing somebody who's a little bit out of her depths. Like, she's clearly intelligent. She clearly believes in the cause, but I think she's scared and is unsure of, you know, I think just not confident. So I want to see the person that does become the leader that we do see in Star Wars. So I think I'd like to see more of that. I would like to see what happens with Luthen. Like, he's not around during Rogue One. So, like, does he die? Like, you know, what happens with him? And, you know, Andor really become, I think we've seen him, you know, make that turn, and now he really believes in the rebellion and wants to see it through. But I'd like to see more of that. So I definitely think that there's more stories to tell in season two. So I'm excited for it, you know, and excited to see what they come up with. But yeah, there's definitely more story to tell.
I've got one name for you though, K2SO. We didn't get K2SO introduced in this season, so that's got to happen. We got to get him his little buddy to follow him around, or his big buddy, as it were.
What happens to his other little buddy, who is, again, like, such a great, like, I mean, like one thing, they've done an amazing job with droids, and like, what happens to him? Because we know we get K2SO, but then I'm a little scared.
Yeah, that's his weekend droid, and K2SO is his weekday droid, his work droid. Yeah. I mean, that was the one thing I was actually looking forward to in this series, and we never got it. Was I wanted to see his kind of origin of that droid, and I thought it was amazing when it was that type of droid that restrained him and threatened to bash him into the wall. You know, every time you look at your best friend, it's like, oh, well, you know, that guy almost killed me. IG, Cassian saves his friends and gets them on a ship off planet and tracks Luthen back to his ship and gives him a choice. Kill me or take me in. Your thoughts on the final scene and your rating.
I like the final scene because it basically says Cassian is in this to win it, right? He's like, you know, I see what's going on here. I see how bad the Empire is. I served my time in their prison. I know what's going on here. And I know what I did on Aldani, and I want in. I want to be a part of this. And if I can't be a part of it, then I don't want to be around for whatever the end is either way. I thought it was really well done. And of course, you know, Stellan Skarsgård, amazing actor. Diego Luna, amazing actor, and is really showing some good chops in this series. And I think that was a really interesting way to end this and set up season two, right? They didn't close this book, right? The book is very much open. I haven't heard whether or not they've actually put a green light on season two, but I'm hoping that they did. And, you know, because this doesn't have Mandalorians and lightsabers and everything else flying around, I think that maybe this didn't get the kind of fanfare or viewership that they were hoping it was going to get. But my review of this season is I think I would give it probably a 9. It was really well done. It was amazingly acted. It was beautiful to look at. There was a bunch of stories going on all at the same time, which I'm always a fan of. You know, Game of Thrones was the same way, and I love Game of Thrones. So having more than one plot line to follow at the same time is always an interesting thing to me. And not all of them were going at the same breakneck pace, right? Mon Mothma's storyline was moving very slowly, but it was very necessary. So some things are moving very quick from episode to episode. Some things are taking a long time to set up. I love that about this show. It's brilliantly written. It's beautifully acted. However they put together the scenes and the shots and everything, it's amazing. And like Ryan said, B2MO, another knock it out of the park droid, right? You know, it's another one that, like, it was really interesting, like a droid that I must have had an emotion chip somewhere, because he cared about Marva, he cared about Cassian. He was interesting to watch, and it was just a really fun and interesting time. I enjoyed the series very much. I'm really looking forward to a season 2, and I'm hoping that it got enough viewership, or they're going to sell enough toys or whatever it takes to get a season 2, because this was really good for me. It's not perfect, but it's really close. A 9 for me.
So going into this, I've not been shy in saying this was the series I was least interested in, just because it was a character from Rogue One that I didn't find to be all that interesting. So I was not really looking forward to it. And like, I'm happy to say I was completely wrong. I think it's easy to compare this to The Mandalorian. And what I find is interesting is I love The Mandalorian. I think that, but that's kind of like our like nostalgia food. You know, it's like it's feeding the nostalgia and giving us all the amazing, cool Star Wars things that we never thought we'd get. And it's amazing and a great show, and I can't wait for the next season. Where this was, you know, just a great show that if you took out the Star Wars and set it on Earth now or 50 years from now or whatever time, it would fit perfectly, you know, because it is such an allegory for war and rebellion. And again, we have these interesting themes with policing and prisons and just the ideas of like, what's the right way to go about a rebellion? You know, do you have to sacrifice people? Do you not? And so I think the show is a really, the story was great. It's really complex in a way that I don't think we've gotten at all in Star Wars yet. And not only a complex story, but it has complex characters. Everybody, I mean, there's no one note character on this show. Everybody has layers. Nobody is fully good or fully bad. Even like Cyril, who's kind of the obnoxious, nerdy, like bad guy, is a complex character with mommy issues. And it's just, it's really amazing how they took so many characters and like still, you know, Cassian Andor is still like the least interesting person in his own show. And he was great. Like Diego Luna is awesome and the character is great. But like there's so many, this is such an ensemble with so many interesting characters. The writing's great. It's shot beautifully. It really, even for a show that is probably not, you know, they did not spend as much money as they did on The Mandalorian or even probably Boba Fett. It looks grand. It looks vast. And like when you're in the Empire spaces, it just looks great. Everything about it looks great. So yeah, I just love it. The writing was great. The story is great. Dialogue's awesome. Couple logical things here. Not a big deal, but I really love the show and can't wait for season 2. So I would give it a 9.
All right. You guys are together on that. Now the concept of Star Wars to me is giant. Unlike Game of Thrones, which takes place on, what, 2 continents? Star Wars, hundreds of planets across an amazingly vast galaxy. So when they announced this project, I felt it was time that they could have spent doing something else. But they made it work. I do have a few issues with the length. It could have been slightly shorter, maybe about 10 episodes, without losing too much. Andor, Diego Luna did a really amazing job with this project. Kyle Soler, who didn't even come up in our review, he killed it. Andy Serkis, Stellan Skarsgård, just great. The acting was better than a TV show deserves. Then you combine that with the list of just mic drop moments, like the Aldani heist. That was one of the best Star Wars happenings if that was the main plot of the show, it would have been worth it. I mean, they could have got there a lot quicker, or but if it was just the heist, I would have been happy. But then, you know, we had a few moments like the prison break, which the whole scenario was amazing. Luthen's escape. I mean, there were so many good things about the show. This is, to me, what Star Wars is supposed to be. It's not just constantly on the same planet. It's not just following one family, but I want to see everything. I want to see the world. I want to see villains and heroes, and I want to see things that matter. And the Force was definitely with Andor. The Cynic Radio podcasts, I think we're all on the same boat. I think we all give it a 9. So we'll be back next week with our review of Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, and I'm not going to make any friends with that one. A lot of you won't be happy. Thanks again for joining us. We're going to do this type of content every single week. You can find us on all the socials at Cynic Radio. Until next time, IG.
Don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at CynicRadio.com. Available for download on iTunes.